is on.
Stacey, I was thinking about the show today, and I know that there is some minor Seahawks stuff.
Is there?
Not really. Yeah, that's just it. I just was fully committed to not talking about the Seahawks today because I think we've talked enough right now. I mean, I know there's a game coming up. It's Arizona, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have what? What day is it? Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
Blur's day. We have three more days to talk about Arizona.
Way too much time.
And that's two more days than you need to talk about Arizona, honestly. It's two more days than you need to talk about the entire state, much less the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, I was going to say, as a team and a geographical area.
Absolutely. We know it's hot.
Look,
it's dry.
You've got malls.
I mean, there's Flagstaff, which is cool, and the rest of it, eh. But so let's not talk about the Seahawks today, unless we actually end up going back down that path somehow by some tangential, not intentionally. If we just end up there, it's okay. But if we don't want to go there intentionally. I'm more curious about one thing. So when Aaron was on the show, one of the things that he and you really bonded over, not just Tiger King, but it was on generally on television and television watching habits.
Yeah.
And so while I am no Aaron Mason, as has been told to me.
many times.
Many, many times. I do watch the occasional thing on my laptop.
Your lack of addiction to television has always upset me most.
I know. You kind of look down your nose at me, and I get that.
A little bit.
But I understand that, too. And I understand, you know, the TV elites and the way they treat the rest of us.
Yes.
But I would say that there's a couple of shows that I'm liking right now, and I want to run them past you to find out if you're watching. And if you're not watching, if you would watch, and then we could talk about this at some other point when we have a lull in the season and we just don't want to talk about the Seahawks.
Okay.
So my current favorite show on television is Letterkenny, and it's on Hulu. Are you in any way familiar with this show? Have you heard about it?
Someone that writes letters.
No, it's the name of a town.
Okay.
It's a little town, and apparently this town's name... Well, I mean, it's a fictional town, and it's fictionally named after another fictional town or a real town in Canada. And it is a... So if you... Well, you grew up in SeaTac, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't really qualify as a small town in this regard. This is a town of 5,000 people in the middle of Canada nowhere. And it is like every 5,000 person town. It's got a, you know, high school, and it's got, you know, the standard stuff, but it focuses on the small group of people. The main guy, Wayne, who is sort of the central character, leads out every episode. And the intro to the show is delightfully short, and it just says, this is the town. There are 5,000 residents of Letterkenny, these are some of their problems. And then they go
is
into
it a
the
comedy?
Show. Yes. And it maybe is. I haven't thought something was this smart and funny. Well, I mean, it still doesn't quite hit the Fleabag level, which I thought was
so
was genius. But I don't expect everything to. That operated at such a sophisticated level that I'm not trying to make it. This is sort of more like Arrested Development in that it's bizarre and very, very smart and very, very funny. And even though they kind of are doing the same thing a lot, it's funny every single time. And this little town with a couple of bro-ish hockey players who end up being two of my favorites, Wayne himself, his sister, his two friends, and they all kind of hang around and talk a lot. And then the little machinations of towns and how, and it's the thing I like about it is this. And one of the things that I find that I am on shows that I gravitate toward.
Okay.
So I liked Seinfeld fine, like everyone else did. And
I didn't watch Seinfeld.
And I like Curb Your Enthusiasm fine. But the shows that I tend to like more than that are the shows that have sort of this core of a good heart. Like it's, they're not like in Seinfeld, Larry David has a really dim, he's funny, but he has a very dim view of humanity. When you're given the opportunity to act in a self-interest way that is good for you and not for everyone else, 100% of his characters will.
Yeah.
But in other shows, let's just use, I don't know, Parks and Rec.
Okay.
Parks and Rec, everyone's kind of like a flawed person with a good heart. Not a, you know, they're not always purely self-interested. And I kind of like that just in terms of comedy. I like when somebody can poke fun at a situation and poke fun at a group of people, but still be very human about it. And so Letterkenny, I'm over describing it because it's just absolutely hysterical. It is, I would say, the funniest show on television right now.
Well, and that's such a good explanation of why you might like something, because I thought about a show when you brought up the topic that I wanted to say. I'm going to say the same show, but I'm realizing I like it for the same reason, which is it's a comedy where people have good hearts
right.
at the end of the day. And so you laugh at their awkwardness or lack of social niceties or whatever it is that they're
right.
doing, or they're a fish out of water. But at the end of the day, it is feel good. You
right.
feel good watching it. And that's Ted Lasso. I've told you to watch it before.
You have? And I'm going to. Actually,
okay,
I've actually queued it up and put it on my list. So I didn't meet my assignment immediately, but I will meet it by the end of this weekend.
It's based entirely on a fake character named Ted Lasso, who is basically, like, without saying it, like an SEC football coach.
Right.
And he is obviously from the U.S. and goes over to take over and coach a Premier League team and has no idea how soccer is played, had no idea about any of it. And so in these commercials that they created for NBC when NBC Sports got the Premier League games, they did it as a promotion of him being there and just knowing nothing. And it was kind of poking fun at Americans, our obsession with football, our lack of knowledge of soccer, but then some things that we also love about that, too.
Right.
They took that character, which was kind of shallow and like a little tough.
It's probably a stereotype.
And a stereotype, 1,000%. And they made him much more lovable in this show. And everyone is a likable character. Everyone gets a chance to develop. Even the villains get a chance to develop. And it's so good because of that. And it's part of a... I had a conversation with a friend once just about optimism versus pessimism in general. It's... Sometimes I toy with pessimism. It's fun to do that sometimes because... You get great humor out of it.
Right.
Larry David, like you said, great comedic writer. Like, the shows
Fantastic.
Are hilarious.
Right.
There's a scene that I still remember to this day. I think about every time I'm in a grocery store, and it's this woman having a breakdown. She's sobbing in the frozen section, and she's standing in front of a door, and Larry David is trying to get into the frozen section in front of her, and so he opens a door, like a door over, and tries to reach over without comforting her and
right.
see how far he can reach into the other freezer
That's
door.
A very Larry David
it's
scene.
It's very Larry
because
David.
Because she's having a bad time
and
his character is completely self-interested
exactly.
right
and it's so funny but I think that sometimes we see shows that are feel-good shows as being more vapid
right.
or empty
right
and instead of recognizing that like those are also important parts of humanity to explore and it's literally a different philosophical approach what if there is goodness in people and that's at the root of people. And I think that these shows explore that in smart ways. And I think sometimes it gets written off because it's not Breaking Bad and it's not exploring the darkness
right.
of humanity. When really, I think it just explores a different side to it. And I think that we talked about it, me and this friend, in a conversation of sports in general. So it didn't have anything to do with TV shows, but we were talking about the idea of some people that are like tortured sports fans, and instead of buying into something or being optimistic about a game, they're just pessimistic about it because it hurts less
right.
when they lose. I think that sometimes optimism, feel-good things, heartfelt things are seen as being less intelligent. And I don't think that's the case with Ted Lasso. It's so smart. They turned a TV commercial into a phenomenal show.
Yeah, well, and so... I don't know if we mentioned this when we were talking movies once before with the aforementioned Aaron Mason, but that was the criticism. So one movie I really, really love is Amelie, which is, I don't know if you've seen it mm-hmm. or not. So it got criticized initially. I thought it was clever and funny and really sweet. It got criticized initially for being kind of light, like too...
Would you know, imagine telling someone that their view of the world is too a certain
well,
way?
And there's a sadness like at the heart of it, but
yes.
it still is, you know, it is still mostly happy or funny. And the director said in response, he goes, why is that a less genuine human emotion than sadness?
Yes.
Why is and his point is like, we only take it seriously if it's
yep.
got some tortured human existence, some thing that we refer to as either edgy or deeper. And mm-hmm. suddenly that makes literature like there was a period of time in like 1980s American fiction, like there had to be some horrible incest in there. There had to be something in there that really showed you the pathos of the human existence. And then maybe surviving that horrible thing. And that's where you get the redemption when you could just I'm not saying I want to read a novel about someone who just has nothing but lucky breaks and happy parties.
Yeah.
On the other hand, that stuff is as genuine. The stuff that keeps you buoyant as opposed to the stuff that drags you down. They're both fundamentally you know, they're opposing forces, but they're both fundamentally the human existence.
Well, and both are as difficult to explore, right? You think about whether it's in books, whether it's in television, movies, wherever it is, there are some really smart films, brilliant works of literature that ultimately explore that side, whether it's happiness, right, whether it's a gratefulness, a feeling that just isn't depression. It doesn't mean that you don't have those things in there. But the author or the TV writer or the director chooses to take it in a different direction. And I think that's just as difficult to land.
Oh, absolutely.
It really is.
No question. No question. Would you call yourself a happy person?
I think so. Overall, yeah. And I don't think that I think that it's happiness is tied to like a naivete.
Right.
Wow, I almost didn't land that. But it is. It's tied to being like, you don't understand the world.
Right.
You don't see the darkness. And it's like, or is this someone who, I'm not talking about myself, but, or is this someone who chooses to see a humor in it that isn't at the expense of someone else? Back to Life is a show like that. It's on Showtime. It's another amazing show that explores a woman who has been released from prison after 18 years, and it's a comedy, even though it explores really dark themes. And there are little moments of like, her relationship with her friend that she was friends with in high school, she's had a falling out with. Her relationship with her parents who are struggling to try to, like, you know, help her assimilate back into the world, that are the best parts of the show.
Right.
And they are also the things that bring you the relief away from the awkwardness and awful behavior that she experiences from other people when she gets out.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. So, all right, then I will make it a point to watch... Tell me the name of the show again. I wrote it down at home.
Back to Life.
Ted
Lasso.
Ted Lasso.
So good.
Yes, I will watch it. And you've got to watch Letterkenny.
I will.
Give it like two or three episodes. And I don't know. I mean, if it's not your... I mean, it's actually harder, I think, for me anyway, to recommend comedies than dramas. Mainly because I think our dramatic experiences, what we take from it, are more similar than what we take away from comedy. I think comedy is so specific that there are things that people find funny that I don't. I had a hard time. I never thought, I don't know, you probably never watched this, too old for you, but like Aaron and I have talked about Beavis and Butthead.
Mm.
And I never found it that funny. And I think partly because it just hit kind of close to home with my friends in high school. But I didn't find that terribly funny. And there's other shows that people find really, really great, like, I don't know, like Friends.
Or think of like...
And I always thought Friends was just... I liked the fact that the cast seemed to have really great chemistry.
They did.
But short of that, the writing, I thought everything about it was aggressively mediocre. And I never quite understood what the big deal was, except that people kind of wanted to be those people and have that. And I get that sort of vicarious experience more than it was a comedy experience.
And now humor has kind of evolved too, where you have really abstract, whether it's cringe humor, whether it's comedy, bang bang, stuff like that, that like I don't think would have existed.
BoJack Horseman.
Exactly.
I mean, there's unusual stuff out
yeah,
there.
Yeah. And then there are people that I think are funny that hate some of those types of humor.
Right.
Like, Mike Salk, I forget what we were talking about. He hates cringe humor. Like,
yes.
He hates it. I think we were talking about it on the show or something like that. I love Nathan For You. It is laugh out loud funny to me. Other people watch it and they're like, I cannot watch this. I cannot. And it's such a brilliant
genre. I think Aaron really
genre.
Likes Nathan For
yeah,
You. Yeah,
it's such a brilliant genre of humor that like did not exist 15 years ago.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, I think that comedy writing has gotten so sophisticated and so good that people are willing to take chances there, sometimes in places that they're not willing to take in drama. And it's, but that also means that it's just more difficult to, we all have that sort of like light and dark area that makes us laugh. Right. And they're all pretty specific.
You are so close to being Ashley Judd from Home Is Where the Heart Is, saying we all got lightness and darkness.
I've been trying to getting closer to Ashley Judd has been a lifetime ambition for me. So I would. All right. So we've got our television assignments done. We've got just a few minutes left. Is there anything really we need to talk about? Can we actually maintain?
No, I'm just kidding. There's, let's see, what do you need to know? You need to know that Jamal Adams potentially has a chance to get back. I think that's the name everyone's going to be looking for. You need to know that the Arizona
Why
Cardinals...
Why not just hold him out? I mean, if they're 5-0...
Well, because
they're playing the Cardinals. And see, it
yeah,
seems
but the
like...
Cardinals are in your division. The Cardinals just demolished the Dallas Cowboys, a team that almost beat you on a last-second touchdown. I will say, I don't believe in the relativity rule in football, the idea that, like, you beat that team, so you're better than that
yeah,
team. I don't buy that.
That's it doesn't like, seem to hold true.
No, that would be like saying, well, the Raiders beat the Chiefs, and so every team that the Chiefs have beaten, like, we don't know if they're better than the Raiders. I mean, it just doesn't work in football.
Right.
You game plan for specific quarterbacks,
right.
specific receivers, or whatever it is. But that's a long explanation, but the Arizona Cardinals just had a great game against the Cowboys, so...
Yeah, I know. Why not sit them, though? I mean, it's you're 5-0. You've got... The Cardinals are good, not great. You've got a guy who you are going to so thoroughly need later in the season. It seems like if you're going to just, like, and give somebody else a little bit more experience, it seems like if there's a good time to do it, rather than putting him out there and having him maybe aggravate
right.
something, largely at this point in the season, especially with the Packers losing... Not a meaningless game, but as meaningless a game as it can be in the middle of the season.
I wouldn't be surprised if they were toying with that idea. I mean,
right.
this is an incredibly competitive front office in addition to players. Pete
yeah.
Carroll's incredibly competitive. Jamal Adams, an incredibly competitive person. So they aren't people to... I mean, Pete Carroll was one of the last coaches to let players sit out the preseason games
right.
Before he finally rested guys like Russell Wilson last year.
Right.
But... This is something where I would be considering it just a little bit because you've got a guy that you want to be part of your organization moving forward. You know that you can make a good push into the postseason and maybe you consider it. Also, it doesn't hurt that Ryan Neal, who's been filling in for him, has played really well.
Are you, is the game here?
No.
Games in?
No, it's on the road in Arizona.
So
I had to really think about
how
it.
How do you folks from the broadcast side and the pre-show and post-show and all that sort of business, how do you folks arrange that? What do you do?
Do you still
go to the stadium?
No, I don't travel. There's actually quite a few reporters from different outlets that would normally travel that aren't this year just because so normally at a game, you would go to the locker room after the game
right.
and you get that's where you get sound. Your only access to players is in the locker room. I know some people are like, well, you shouldn't be back there, but like that's your only chance.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where you go and you get your sound, you get your interviews, and then you duck out. And
so what do they do now when you win this remote?
Now it's all just video. It's all Zoom calls.
So do they just traipse them in front of a camera and everyone gets the same thing, or how does it work?
Yeah, that's
pretty
exactly
much
what it is. So it's the same thing when you travel. So rather than being able to travel and then go down into the locker room. And
so there's no benefit to traveling?
Not really. I mean, the only difference is, and this is why I don't mind going to the stadiums for home games still, is it is nice to have sometimes a view of the entire field where you can see a broadcast follows the quarterback. A broadcast
right.
follows the ball.
Right.
And sometimes it's nice to be able to see, like, okay, this defensive back that, like, completely, or wide receiver that ran off the TV screen
right.
essentially. You can track where they go. You can look along the sidelines. You can see this player just walked into the injury tent. This player's walking to the locker room. It's easier to track what's going on. So that there is a benefit.
Well, I think that the problem is, and we're actually we're getting long here. The problem is, this is a good conversation for later on. All right, Stacey, thank you.
Thanks.
You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell. You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell.
So, Rachel, I have a question for you.
I would love to answer it.
How?
I'm an eager beaver today.
All right.
Lay
then.
It on me.
Okay.
Okay.
Here comes a question. Are you ready? You ready?
I told you. I've been ready.
All right.
Yeah.
How is it that you During the pandemic, how do you keep in touch with friends? In other words, we can't get together. You can't call someone up and go have a beer. So you've got to do these other things. So, Rachel,
it introduces a level of anxiety that I didn't even know I had, like communicating with people. So I would rather talk on the phone, just like old school style. Right. I do that. A lot of texting. I was just forced last week to join Marco Polo. I don't know if you know about that app.
I don't.
It's this app where you communicate solely through making videos of just yourself talking, and then it sends it to the other person, and you just like make video messages. And I have sent a lot of postcards.
So it's just video texting, essentially.
Video texting. Yeah, just kind of built into the platform. But there was this article I read that really resonated with me, titled Maintain Your Friendships with a Boring Weekly Email Thread. And in it, do you know who Gretchen Rubin is?
No.
She is at this point like a happiness expert. She wrote a couple of books about happiness, not having to do with depression, but just
I think I have read about her. Yes.
Yeah, she's great. And she said that she was talking to her mom, who said, when you're in touch with a person all the time, you have a lot of things to say to each other. But when you rarely see a person, you have a hard time coming up with things to say. And it's kind of the idea, you know, if you haven't talked to someone in a year, you have to tell them all of these big life things. It's like, oh, I got divorced. Oh, I got a raise. And it's the mundane that really keeps friendships going.
That's
so
true.
I have one friend in particular who I share a tremendous amount of boring information with, and in turn, she shares her boring stuff with me. And years ago, we established, you are my boring person.
Right.
So like last week, well, I'm sorry, I showed you this too. Like, yeah. I sent her the pictures of my bathroom drawer reorganization, which
yes, you did.
I looked
you
at
you showed
so
anyone
much.
Who would stand still long enough to look at them. You're
I,
so happy
like
about
looking
it.
Looking at porn. I was right. Like under my desk, like looking at the pictures, just like, oh my God, I can't stop. And we're always sending, like, you know, look what I did with my avocado. Like this is the most boring stuff. But I have to say, because her and I live in different states, that I feel closer to her than a lot of people because I know all these little things.
Yeah.
And it's not just big life events.
Well, that's actually how you, I mean, we've talked about this, I think, recently on the show about the whole nature of adult friendship, and that you build a friendship as a kid by just this repetition. It's in school. So you build it, or a club or something like that. You just see them, and gradually you start getting along. But part of that is the exchange. It's not always like heavy amounts of information or important stuff. You kind of build it the way you kind of spackle that whole thing together is with the mundane, like the regular hanging out. And I think that those conversations that are not fundamentally important, like life-changing moments or stress moments, maybe just the boring stuff about finally figuring out, you know, your email situation, or finding a way to organize your sock drawer.
Bathroom drawer.
Whatever. I just organized my sock drawer, so that's why okay. I'm saying that. We all have our things. I think that those things actually are, I mean, it's on the natural. If that's all you ever talked about, maybe not much there.
Yeah.
But those are the sort of like little threads. And I think it's entirely true. I talk better with the people I talk to more regularly than the people I don't.
I think that it's important, though, when you're talking about the mundane, that it's like mundane things that the other person cares about, because it can get too mundane. Like with this friend, we talk a lot about mundane things about food and cleaning, and then also just like, how do you handle this situation with this person? Stuff like that. Whereas some people tell me the mundane, and I am like, oh, I do not care. Like, I don't want to hear. I never want to hear about traffic. I don't want to hear about like how you got cut off, every little detail. Like, I was in the intersection and then they came up this way. Like,
right.
I do not care. So it's important to somehow figure out the perfect boring.
Yeah, but. But even within that, I mean, we're sort of probably we're filtering a bit right now. I've had plenty of close friends bore me, you know, and I'm sure I've bored many times plenty of close friends.
No, you, come on.
It is endemic to the situation, but as long as the whole thing doesn't contain nothing but really picayune stuff. I do know people, I know someone who I'm kind of close to, who does tell the most profoundly boring stories. Could take any story, could take a heist film and make it just like sound like a shopping list.
It's what do you really, do?
Well, you know, you just kind of ride through it because they're a good person and you will get to a good place at some point. But I think the bigger lesson here is that regular email or whatever it is that you're doing to stay in touch with people, that it's regular more than anything else. Like worrying about like having all kinds of great content is less important than that just sort of regular interaction, because that sets the table for when you actually need that closeness and you need that person to talk to, if you don't have any sort of normal relationship with them, it's weird to have a friendship that's nothing but fraught, right? With pressure. It's nice to have ordinary conversation. But I still have to say the email thread thing is probably pretty, I mean, I'm on a few of them, and mainly it's just about organizing something or talking about something, but I just don't know that I would do a data dump once a week on something like that.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work with me.
I don't really like this idea that it's like, okay, it's Monday, time to write down all my boring stuff. I feel right. like it should just be when the mood strikes you. I'm kind of worried about going into the dark, cold weather, because this is when it's going to be hard to see friends, because luckily, you know, the pandemic started at a time when the weather wasn't so bad. We went through summer. I think a lot of people are going to start getting lonely once you can't do the outside stuff as much. Although there's a lot of backyard tents and heat lamps being purchased by, you know, regular old people.
All over. Several of my friends have purchased the backyard propane. Excuse me, the backyard propane heaters. And
dare you burp in my section.
And that is and those things also at various levels of their capacity to assemble these things. So frequently they're not working anyway, but this nice, it's nice as an idea. That stuff is going to go only so far. I think it is going to be a hard season on people. I think it is going to be a little bit difficult for people who don't have the space, especially someone living in a small apartment who doesn't even have a space on their own.
That's what I was just going to say, is like, just like everything else in life, like the more money you have, the better off you're going to be. Like if you don't have a backyard or friends with backyards, if everyone lives in an apartment, what do you do?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and maybe those emails and maybe Zoom calls will suddenly start seeming like a little better thing to do than it does right now.
Better than nothing. Well, if people listening want more friendship talk, that is the latest topic of my newest podcast, Your Last Meal. You can listen wherever you get podcasts or at Your Last Oh no, you burped. I'm having like a frog in my throat. What's happening? Puberty's next. Exactly. YourLastMealPodcast.com.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
Coming up, we will be talking, of course, with our final thoughts of the evening. Frank, Shane, and I we're going to do what we do every night, which is our final data dump for all of you folks. The last things on our minds before we start working on tomorrow's show, right after the break. All right, we're there. End of the show, breaking the tape. Horse back to the barn, as John Curley likes to say.
Yeah.
We've got just a little bit of cargo to unload on you before we call it a night. I guess I'll go first this time on what's on my mind. I was thinking a lot about the lawsuit against Google, which is similar to the one against Microsoft, which is similar to the one that's been proposed against Amazon, which is similar to a lot of, another that's proposed against Facebook. And here's the thing. I mean, we celebrate these companies for being vast and powerful and American and for being world leaders in technology. But the downside, of course, to all of this is when you get that big and you get that powerful, which is kind of the way capitalism is designed, you have to figure out, well, how do you regulate that? How do you stop the beast from becoming too powerful? And this is the whole tension in antitrust law. And it's really interesting because we do everything we can to make sure these companies have the capacity to grow as big as they possibly can. And then we suddenly tell them no. At one particular At the point we tell them no, they're already too big to care. And so it's like having a dog, you know, that you've never really made behave very well. And now it's in the house and now it doesn't want to listen to you anymore. And this is exactly the way it is now that we are with Google. I'm going to be very interested in seeing how this pull. I don't have any personal disdain for Google. I use virtually all of Google's products. And I can tell you this, Google knows more about me than my mom does. And so I am very interested in see how this plays out. I think antitrust law is interesting because it's this weird
Band-Aid to a system we have set up, which actually leads companies exactly down
to this point.
So anyway, that's what's on my mind. Shane?
What's on my mind is about 2 weeks ago, I was able to successfully register to vote. And over the weekend, I got my ballot. And I was talking about how excited I was to vote and how I'll, you know, just involve in the civil process. But I'm finding it quite stressful just looking at some issues that I really feel like I have absolutely no clue about. And I've been trying to do as much research as I can. I've been filling it out very, very slowly. But it is it's a lot more complicated than kind of what I was anticipating, which is kind of silly to say. But that's truthfully how I'm feeling about it.
It's a big ballot. And so remember, sometimes that's actually by design. What political scientists have, and political consultants have found is that if there's an initiative they don't like, they'll put three more up just like it. And what happens is people get confused and they vote no on all of them because they don't like it. I mean, that's an old technique. So some of what you're seeing on this ballot, that's not so much true.
Sometimes
that little bit of confusion you're feeling is entirely what political consultants are actually going for, because they feel like people will reflexively just say, I don't understand it. No.
True. In some of the stuff I even read, I just feel like it's hard for me to want to vote because I feel like it doesn't really affect me, and I feel like my vote's just going to negatively affect somebody else in some
roundabout way. But that's a healthy way of looking at it, too.
It is. Along those lines, I had the delightful experience earlier this week, maybe over the weekend, of voting with my daughter and my wife.
Mm-hmm.
So FaceTime call. Sarah's down in Florida. She is a first-time voter, right? Just registered. And so literally we went down her ballot with her and kind of guided her through the process of filling it out.
And how many votes, each other's votes, did you guys cancel out?
There were some noteworthy ones.
I would imagine.
But the really great thing about it is, even though we differ politically in issue to issue in the family, right, there was a great sense of support and respect for the different points of view. And I loved that. If you had said to me even 3 months ago, you're going to sit down and spend 15 minutes helping your daughter vote for the first time, I'd have told you you were just full of it.
And in fact, if somebody had sat down with your daughter and said, in the next 3 months, you're going to help your dad vote for the for the whatever time, she would have been surprised, too.
I'm sure she would have.
All right, folks. Well, thank you once again for joining us here at Cairo Nights, and we will be seeing you tomorrow.
And I'll be there. Just come out with no pride to bear.